my friend, is gonna keep you free and clean. Now you wear your skin like iron, and your breath's as hard as kerosene. What your mama's only boy, but her favorite one, it seems. She began to cry when you said goodbye. You sank into your dreams. Poncho's a bandit boy's, his horse is fast as polished steel. His gun outside his pants, then on this world to feel.
And that was Steve Earle singing Poncho and Lefty from his tribute album to Towns Van Zandt entitled Towns. This is the Whiskey Preacher Podcast, and I'm your host, Phil Shepard. Today we are continuing the Sophia series. This is the 9th installment in the Sophia series, and my guest today is the renowned Phyllis Tickle. I am so excited to have her on the Whiskey Preacher podcast. Welcome, Phyllis. Thank you so much for joining us today and taking time out of your busy schedule. We're good.
Well, hello there. It's good to be here, Phil. Nice to hear your voice and to hear good music. We have to remember that all these wonderful things are blessings in this St. Valentine's Day. Or should we confess that we're doing a thing together on St. Valentine's?
Well, happy Valentine's Day to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, too.
Like I told you before, I couldn't think of a better way to spend Valentine's Day than having a conversation with you.
Well, that's very kind. And I likewise. He was a great old boy with St. Valentine, and we honor him. Hopefully, by the conversation that we're about to have.
That sounds great to me. Well, let's just jump in. Tell me, so you grew up in Memphis? Outside of Memphis?
I am happy to say that I grew up. Memphis is very flat and very hot, and I am not very attuned to that, even after all these years. I grew up in East Tennessee, way up just where Tennessee kisses North Carolina and Virginia and Kentucky. About 7 miles from North Carolina and 18 from Virginia and about 40 from Kentucky. Yammered way up in there, just as high in those hills as you can get. And, you know, it snowed in October, and we didn't thaw back out until the first or middle of May. And I loved it. I thought that was how God meant the world to be. And then got married to a doctor and came back down to Memphis, where the world's largest medical school is, always was, I guess, and still is, and where he was teaching. And I thought I was going to die the first 4 or 5 years, and I have gotten over that now, but I've never come to love the heat. You're in Texas, though. You know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's always really hot, except the last few weeks. It's been the winter apocalypse around here. It reminds me of growing up in Alaska. It's pretty chilly. At least it has been. Now it's 70 and beautiful.
Yeah, well, it's 70 and beautiful here, too, and I'm not a happy camper. There's something wrong with sun on St. Valentine's Day.
Are you trying to say that Valentine...
It's not an appropriate memorial to him.
are you trying to say that we're all supposed to dress in black on Valentine's Day?
We grew up way up in the hills together, and we were reared Presbyterian, and at 17, I went off to college, and saw the light of God and my first set of red doors and became an Episcopalian and went straight from there up until we got involved in the thing that you and I are both interested in, the coming of emergence Christianity big time into the North American scene. And while I would not pretend to lay claim to being an emergence Christian per se, I think I've fooled with it long enough now, so I'm an Anglo-emergent, and I know I have become not only a student of what's happening, but a real admirer in every way of what emergence Christianity is and what it promises to become for the faith. So it's a long way from them hills.
So tell me this real quick. I'm just going to dive into my first question.
All right.
Those who say the emergent conversation is a generational thing, what would you tell them?
I think that is one of the two or three most peculiar things that's been that can be said about emergent Christianity. Of course, it's not. If you go, I think that position is held by those who are not very familiar with emergence itself, and who are postulating sort of out of their heads instead of out of their eyeballs. If you go to a cohort meeting, and I, Lord knows, I don't even know how many, or even to a gathering, or a node, or a pod meeting, now it seems to me that at least a quarter and perhaps a third of the folk who are there are as white-haired as I am, and I'm 77, so that's saying a lot. Yes, there's no question that the bulk of emergence Christians are going to be 40 to 42 or 3, somewhere like that, and under, for the same reason that the bulk of citizens of emergent sensibilities at a secular level are in that same group. Anybody born in the last 40 years has been born into the great emergence, and that means that every part of his or her life is going to be affected by emergent sensibilities, and that includes his or her faith, and for most of that, that's the Christian faith. If we were to expand the question, we'd see the same thing happening in Judaism, in North America and Europe both, where there is an emergence Judaism. So Google, you know, Synagogue 3000, and you will see that the things that inform the great emergence as an across-the-board sociological, political, intellectual, economic, whatever you want to call it, shift, in the same way that the Great Reformation was a shift in all of those things. Everything in society, Western society, has changed, including religion. And emergence Christianity is just an expression, religious expression, of the larger construct, which is the Great Emergence. And yes, it seems disproportionately generational, simply because those folk under 40 have been born into it and can't change from being emergent any more than they can change the color of their eyes. And that doesn't mean they have to practice emergent Christianity or emergent Judaism or emergent Buddhism, which, by the way, there is. If they choose to go back to institutional church, it just means that most of their reactions, politically, intellectually, technologically, sociologically, are going to be emergent reactions. So it's a strange, I think the reason the statement it's a generational thing or it's a young people thing bothers me is that I interpret it, it's not the era of the statement that bothers me. What bothers me is I interpret it, rightly or wrongly, as being a way for people who don't want to engage what's happening to domesticate the issue. It's almost like saying, oh, it's a kid's thing, they'll outgrow it, or that's the subtext I hear. And I think that's a dangerous subtext. I know it's a dangerous one to let go unchallenged. They're not going to outgrow it. We're going to die out of it, those of us who are older. And that's the direction this thing will go. It won't go the other way around. But to not perceive the absolute whole of what's happening, the magnanimity of what's happening, the monumental scope of what's happening, and to try to domesticate it into something that people are going to get over or grow out of is a fool's errand. It invites you to, as an older adult, simply be passive in this thing instead of helping to be an architect of it. And that's not even an honorable role for me. That's a very long answer to a very simple question. I apologize. But
no,
you happen to write off, Phil, hit one that truly, truly bothers me.
Well, and I guess my follow-up question would be to that, is also critiques of the way we have chosen to be a part of this emergent faith. People have also said or have critiqued that it's a white male dominant conversation.
Yes, but not many people. It's interesting to me that when you get something like Sojourners doing a cover article or maybe Talk to Any Kiwi doing an article, you get you get an awful lot of play for an idea, at least among people who are not terribly informed. That is the general public that's not totally involved. I think, and I've talked to folk like Tony Jones and Doug Patchett, who've also said that it's absolutely true that Emergent Village and the early emergence Christianity, as you know, came last to the North American continent. Certainly came last to this country, except for Canada, and Canada is now sort of catching up with us too. But anyway, it was in the West, the rest of the westernized world before we got it. But our first real publicly apparent, really high visibility experience with emergence in this country came in the late 90s with a thing called Emergent Village. Now, emergence has been present in this country long before that, but it reached that tipping point. Thank you, Malcolm Gladwell. That tipping point at which suddenly everybody had heard or was hearing of emerging and emergent church. Not that they're the same thing, but at that time they weren't. And it's, I think, fair to say, if you look at it, that Emergent Village, as a division of emergence Christianity in this country, was pretty much originally male and white and overeducated and middle class, or highly educated, I shouldn't say over and highly educated. That's a fair statement. I think it's equally fair to say they didn't stop there, for crying out loud. If you look at some of the leaders now, even Emergent Village, you will see equal participation by some very fine women pastors and women theologues who are, by and large, also highly educated, but not necessarily middle class in their origin or necessarily white. It's changing, but I don't want to offend. I don't mind being an iconoclast or killing sacred cows. I know I'm going to do it, but so I can anticipate the pleasure, but this one bothers me. But there is emergent village and early emerging church, by and large, in this country, came up out of evangelicalism. In fact, there was a time, if you know the book American Grace, Putnam and Campbell's new release, you're aware that they do a good deal with the rather dramatic decline of evangelicalism in by 91, 92, 93 in this country. And that decline was due in part to the fact that there was arrestedness among many folk who were to become, were to become the nexus for emergent village and emerging church. And they brought with them some of the more sociologically conservative and biblically reinforced prejudices or preconceptions or characteristics, whatever you want to call it. That included a certain patriarchal approach to things, if you will, that meant that it was going to be male and a certain privilege and a real sense of middle class. Evangelicalism in most institutional churches had their roots in the stability of the middle class. They were born out of the Reformation, and the Reformation and whatever else it did certainly established the middle class as the modus operandi for the next 500 years. So it's entirely defensible rather than, I think, culpable. I don't think it's culpable at all that when you get to 97, 98, 99, as this thing is growing in this country, it would reflect those ways of doing business. I'd be terribly concerned if in the year of our Lord 2011, those were still operative characteristics, but they are not. Now, they are definitely in place in some parts of emerging Christianity, which is a division of emergence Christianity, the same way that emergent is a division. I laugh and say to audiences, you know, not all Baptist, not all Protestants are Baptist, unless you ask Baptist, and they'll say yes. But the rest of us say Protestantism is a sense of sensibilities. It's a shared conversation. And it can present as Methodist, or it can present as Presbyterians, or as Lutherans, or as Baptists, as far as that's concerned, all of which are lumped together conveniently but accurately because they do resonate with each other, because they do have a shared sense of sensibility. In the same way, emergence Christianity has at least 8, maybe 9, depending on how you slice and dice, presentations of itself. And that didn't even matter until, 22, 24 months ago, when it became apparent that, or it did to me anyway, that it's time to talk about the fact that there are distinct divisions or presentations or definitions of emergent Christianity. And one of them is certainly emergent, and it's fairly clear and easy to define. Another is emerging, and unlike emergent, it is still. And again, you're making huge generalizations because these represent thousands of people, and so you can't say, you know, that they all do this. But by and large, emerging congregations and groups and nodes and pods and gatherings tend to be patriarchal. You don't hear many female leaders. Some of them don't even want a woman to speak. And thank you, St. Paul. If she has a question, let her wait till afterwards and ask her husband. They are homophobic, by and large. They're not really big on diversity. But that just shows a different slant on it. Emergent is almost exactly the opposite. Not patriarchal. Definitely gender inclusive. Absolutely all accepting and welcoming. So those are differences. But yes, strange... And again, I almost felt that there was maybe 2 years ago, 18 months ago, something like that, when we began to get the accusation out loud and on the streets that it's all white, middle-class, overeducated men, I thought, you know, that's not only not true, but it's an interesting thing to bring up. It's almost as if what I really thought, if I'm going to say it, I'll just say it. When a thing, it's really easy to love a baby. It's hard as all get out to love a 2.5-year-old, and you start swatting the kid, the same kid you patted and loved on. It's a sign of the maturation of something that it begins to pick up pushback. I saw this as an evidence of some maturation. And it certainly was an evidence of pushback, the need to try to find a chink to cut this thing down to size a little bit. Interestingly enough, that at least the conversations that I heard about it initiated primarily in standing evangelicalism, which has its own kind of irony. Now, that I may be wrong. That may just have been the sampling that experientially I was exposed to. It may have been that there were other sources for that concern. But the ones that I was aware of that were making the most noise and that were coming across my email screen and my email, all of that, all of the blogs, were primarily evangelical in origin. And I thought, there it is again, the beginning of pushback. And we have seen over the last, year certainly, a good deal of pushback from both Standing Reform and evangelical sources, thinking that maybe they may have bred up a child that that they want to not deny, but temper a little bit, if you will, train up in different ways from the way it's going.
So, like many of us, I remember growing up in Alaska, and I'm entering I can't believe I'm saying this, my 17th year of ministry. And I remember being up in Alaska and with a group of pastors, friends of mine, thinking that we were going crazy, you know, not only because we were starting to think about Christianity differently, but we felt so, I guess, secluded. And then we realized that this larger conversation was happening. And this was in the late 90s. You know, you'd mentioned when Emergent Village was really starting to take off and, you know, these conversations were happening all over the place. When was it for you that you realized there's something different going on? Yeah. And
that's a very good question. I was an academic for a while and left the academy simply because I was rested. I like to see forests more than trees, and academic life, if you pursue it long enough, invites you to see the trees and not the forest. And so I served as an academic dean for 8 years and then decided I really did want to do something a little more exciting and went into publishing. And retired from publishing in 89 to write, just to write. In 90. By 91, if you will remember, suddenly all of the books that were bestsellers. I mean, literally all of the big-selling bestsellers in the commercial market were religion or religion-oriented. And so in 19 and at that time, religion publishing was almost all done, with the exception of Harper and a few other houses. But the bulk of religion publishing, popular religion publishing, was done by denominational houses. And so by 92, Publishers Weekly, the trade journal for the book industry, which had been my trade journal for 35 years in Southern Publishing, called and said, quick, will you come out of retirement and establish a religion department? We're in desperate trouble, and we've got to have somebody who knows publishing inside out and also has some grip on religion. And so, though I had no formal training in religion and still don't, I had been devout Christian all of my life, and fancied I knew a little about it anyway. And so I went up to New York, and within 18 months had established a department that was up and running. Any fool can do that, given enough money and the prestige of a big magazine like Publishers Weekly was. But within that 18 months, it became obvious that it wasn't that we needed a religion department to review books and do all of that. What was needed was somebody to answer the question, which acquisitions editors and publishers were beginning to put somewhat inelegant, like saying, what the hell is going on? You know, or can you tell us, will you quit reviewing the damn books and tell us what we should be acquiring? It got to be pretty direct conversation, which sent me with some, you know, traces of the old academic in me still, it sent me to the scholarship. And if you go to the scholarship, then it's very obvious. In 1907, which was the first one I found, there may have been prior ones, but Walter Rauschenbusch's Christianity and the Coming Social Crisis of the 21st Century, in 1907, the first 40-45 pages of that book are We Are Back in Reformation, which he spelled lowercase re hyphen lowercase f. But it was clear what he meant. We're back into it. By the time you get to Tillich, two or three of his letters mention the fact that the ground is shifting again, or I feel it coming again. The first, I think, and you never know in scholarship, but the first I've been able to find, the church actually talking about emerging Christianity and emerging church at an official level, is a book called The Emerging Church, Part 1. By Colton Wilkin, published June the 5th, it's so important that the day even matters, June the 5th, 1968, bearing the imprimatur of the Roman Church and being the fifth volume in a set of paperbacks to be used for catechesis, that is, for indoctrinating adults into Roman Catholicism. And it's a whole book about emerging church, emerging Christianity, and the shift that's coming. Now, you can say, isn't it truly weird, and it is, that it doesn't hit the general population until 30 years later. I think you can equally well say, however, that emergent Christianity shows up in Europe far earlier than it does in North America, and because that early citation in this country is Roman Catholic, I suspect that somehow the information, the sense of things, the ability to talk about it seeped into the North American Roman Church by way of having had experience with the church in Europe, and that therefore was much more important in catechizing the adult convert to North American Catholicism, that they'd be informed about this. But there's a whole book in there in which it talks about the covenant of Christ. The Christ covenant is that every 500 years we go through one of these whoopies, just like we're doing, and instead of calling the last 500 years Reformation theology, they call it Renaissance theology, or really Renaissance Christianity. That's because Reformation is kind of an unhappy word if you're Roman Catholic, but it's all there. It's all laid out. I can make the case, I can borrow other scholars who make the case, that the first expression of emergence in this country is the Church of the Savior in D.C. when the Crosbys opened that in 43. Now, Church of the Savior does not go to scattered community until 2004 or 5, I can't ever remember. But so it doesn't go to the ecclesiology or the ecclesial structure that you would expect until you get over into this century. But clearly, by 43, you've got the first expression, the first one I know of to call itself an emerging church, is Irving Bible Church in 1969 in Irving, Texas, down where you are, which called itself by that name. So it's a matter, I do think Malcolm Gladwell's why, it's a matter of the tipping point. We didn't get to the tipping point until 98, 99, along in there, when Leadership Network picked it up, and it was a big enough network, and it moved with enough technological sophistication, which now 12 years later seems highly primitive, but at the time it was sophisticated, to cause it to go over into the tipping point. But I've heard emergence leader like you after emergence leaders say, we thought we were crazy, or, you know, even back in the 80s we thought we were crazy, or we watched Matthew Fox and with the 9 o'clock service in England and couldn't figure out what was right and what was wrong about that. So there's all kinds of things you can cite for the presence of it. It just wasn't visible. And you're absolutely right. 17 years into the ministry, I can imagine 17 years back, it must have felt like you were crazy. Or smoking something that you weren't enjoying enough, or something. because it was, just, but it was fairly low key until by the time you get to the, and there are a couple of other books after you get that Roman Catholic catechesis book. There are a couple of trade books that come out. So by 69 and 70, you've got it footnotable. All over the culture. It's just not being talked about. It hasn't liberated itself out into the general conversation in much the same way that, you know, by 15, 17, suddenly we've got Protestantism. But the honest truth is it didn't happen in 15, 17. You know, by 15, 12, 15, 13, if you look at some of what Luther was fussing about, he was fuming. 15, 17 just was when the pot boiled over. And 99 in this country is when the pot boiled over, and there was no denying anymore that the thing was off and running.
So I know we got to wrap up here soon, and so I'm just going to ask, I guess, another personal question is,
right?
Do you have anything in the works? You have a new book coming out soon?
I do, and you probably can tell. I have one that I'm working on. In fact, I'm off the road this year, except for March, April, and May. And then I'm in August, I'm going to Greenbelt, and I'm going to do a week in Seoul, Korea, speaking there. But except for March, April, May, and those two little sallies forth to jump the ponds, I'm here writing Emergence Christianity and Interim Report. May the dear Lord help me, and I mean it literally and reverently. I am on off to do it. It's the Great Emergence is now what, some 3 years old, I suppose, and it's the work behind it is some 4 or 5 because there's always that kind of lag between composition and publication. So it's time to update it and to change some things that you know, no book is ever the ink is never dry or the glue dry. On a book before there are things you wish you had done differently or that you feel are just plain an error or that suggest error. Not the least of which for me was that the Great Emergence, as I treated it, seemed to be just a religious phenomenon and nothing could be farther from the truth. And I was aghast when I realized that it was being interpreted that way and I wasn't clear. So one of the things I want to clear up for sure early on in Emergence Christianity and Interim Report is the fact that the Great Emergence is like the Great Reformation. Everything has changed in our lives, and as sure as the Reformation gave us Protestantism, this was giving us the emergence of Christianity. Doesn't mean Protestantism is going to die, doesn't mean Roman Catholicism is going to die, doesn't mean Greek Orthodoxy is going to die. It just means that we've got a new child on the block or a new tributary to the river that's Christianity, and that's what it is, and welcome to it. I think the Archbishop of Canterbury is absolutely right when he says in directing the Church of England and its priests and bishops to engage emergence Christianity, which is rampant in the UK, when he says that, he says, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we're not here to save the Church of England. well, we're here to serve the kingdom of God, and behold, God is doing a new thing among us. And I think he's right. But anyway.
When can we look forward to seeing that hit the shelves?
I'm looking forward to seeing it get out of my computer and hit my printer first. To answer your question, the manuscript is supposed to be due the 1st of June. If we make it, it'll be the 8th wonder of the world. I suspect, and if we do, it will be a fall of this year publication. I suspect we're looking at spring of 12.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Phyllis, for joining us today. And if folks want to find you on the web, where can they go?
They can absolutely go to phyllistickle.com. Facebook won't let me have any more friends, I have to say, which just bothers me no end. But anyway, can't have any more friends, but I sure am on Facebook. And also, I've got an email, which may be hard to do on the air, but it's The Farm and Lucy, all one word, all lowercase, thefarmandlucy@aol.com, or Tickrell, T-I-C-K-R-E-L, @gmail.com, any of the above.
Thank you very much for your time, Phyllis. I really appreciate it. You have a wonderful St. Valentine's Day.
Thanks, Bill. You and yours also.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.